Good morning.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Nancy Flodders, and I'm president of ACR. Welcome to this series of the public dialogues and discussions with interesting people involved in conflict resolution on this series known as ACR Conversations. My guest today is Dana Kasperson, who is a professional performing artist and conflict specialist. Dana, you work in conflict engagement, management, and resolution around challenging social issues within the context of a public dialogue. You are a professional performing artist, conflict specialist. How do you mesh those two aspects of your professional work into a flow within that conflict equation?
Well, I've been working in theater and dance for 30 years, and in the last 5 years have started to create these projects called that I'm calling choreographic public dialogues. So my work in conflict has a lot of different aspects, and in all of them I'm interested in very much in how the individual has power within structures and within institutions and within relationships to affect beneficial change. And initially when I started working in conflict, I had no intention of mixing my two practices of as a performer and a creator in theater and dance and in conflict, because I was worried that I would end up with watered-down versions of both. But what I eventually realized is that I think choreographically, which means to choreograph is to organize ideas physically. So I have such a long practice in organizing ideas physically, and I know the efficacy of it. And what I eventually realized is that if I take out the equation of a particular necessity for skill, and I stay instead with the idea of how can I organize the situation so that so that I enable people to connect in a way that's meaningful and impactful around issues that are difficult sometimes to engage with, then this my history and my experience and my skill in working with the body, and not only the body but with the physical aspect of organization, becomes really useful. And so I started to create these projects called choreographic public dialogues, which are I've done three different models at this point. And the first one was I started in Germany, and actually the initial project I started in collaboration with my husband, Bill Forsyth, who's a choreographer as well, and I frequently collaborate with him on projects. And this project was on immigration, and it's an ongoing project. I've done it in four different cities in Germany. And actually, for this project, I was the first time I started using the idea of consciously choreographing. And what's actually interesting to me is that now I recognize that conflict specialists are always choreographing. They're always choreographing the space. They're organizing temporal aspects, rhythmical aspects, also physical aspects for their parties to enable a different kind of outcome than they have been having. And when I was working on Not on Not, I thought about this, you know, the simple exercise continuum that people use. On one end is, let's say, abortion should be banned. On the other end is abortion should be legal everywhere. And where you say, okay, where do you stand on this line? And I thought about how immediately people know where they stand. Everybody understands physically, okay, this is the place. And having that physical way of seeing where the group, where everybody stands on an issue is a quick way, but also an effective way of people getting a sense of each other's beliefs around a topic. And that the body enables this kind of more direct access to our relationship to an issue was really interesting to me. So I thought, okay, so in that first project, I created kind of a version of a continuum, but it's in a triangle, so that the room is the triangle is divided into three parts, and that each side of the triangle has a monitor on it, and then a series of statements will come up. So people are asked to move to the part of the triangle that accords to the statement that makes the most sense to them. And what this does is it gets the group moving, which in and of itself adds a dynamic to the situation, the space that relaxes people, that gets them engaged with each other, and it gets them also physically engaged with the issue because they're asked to take a literal physical stance on their beliefs. So oftentimes in these projects, I try to step back and say, okay, what is the current state of the situation? For example, what is people's current beliefs around immigration? What is the current state of the society in relationship to immigration? How can I create a physical equivalency that helps us see both what people believe, where they stand, what their experience is, and then how do I enable a next step of, okay, what is possible as a result, given what people need and what they want and what the difficulties are? How do we move toward the next step? So this is the first project I did. It utilized space. It gives meaning. And a lot of times what I do is think about, okay, how can I make these physical equivalencies for ideas by assigning meaning to either form or motion or position in the room? And then how do I create an overall choreographic framework within which those motions can take place and have meaning?
So when you're doing this work, are there stories involved, or how do you reach for that content? And let's use immigration then, that particular work that you were doing within that model.
Mm-hmm.
Do stories fit in, or how do you frame the contextual piece around which you're going to create a choreography in organizing the ideas and the situation and the physical space and getting people to move and participate?
So stories are vital to public dialogues because stories are what move us. It's how we connect to the world. It's how we understand our life and our relationship to each other. And for example, in the project I was just describing, Knot on Knot, we begin with this triangle, which is a kind of a positional model, which says, okay, what's our position? And then we move into when I did it recently, I added a first section, which is a circle, which has a simple model of hand gestures that mean yes, no, or maybe. And people respond first to a series of questions that have to do with belonging. Do you understand yourself to be German? Is your family of German descent? So we go from our sense of identity, and then we move into these more positional issues of what do I believe around these issues. And then there's a section in Knot on Knot in particular, which takes place at tables, where it's four people to a table, and there's a very strictly controlled conversation that goes on that I moderate from the front. So a conversation happens at every table at once, only with the people at that table. And this goes then to story. What is your experience around these issues? And in a very compressed way, so people have a minute or two to respond to some questions. And what this does, it's a very, on some ways, kind of a tense situation for people. And initially, people often feel uncomfortable. What I've found is that people say this kind of highly structured, taught tension situation creates a sudden intimacy between people where they have these unexpected conversations around the deeper topics that underlie, for example, immigration, and these questions of belonging and identity. In another project that I did called Three Counter Movements to Violence, which is a project I developed with three groups of high school students in Vermont, we started from the young people's experience and beliefs around violence. And one of the questions they came up with was, that we used as kind of a basis for the event, was, is there a difference between the physical punishment of children and violence? And then we tried to move back from specific stories to more general categories of belief. So, you know, is spanking violence, for example? And then going up kind of a ladder, is pouring soap down children's throat violence? Is hitting a kid with a belt violence? Things like this. And these were where people responded according to their belief, which is extremely varied and quite surprising around the question of what is your definition of violence. And in this model also I had quick conversations that would happen, but this time it was a home base. There was no tables. People were standing, and they would return to their home base to answer a quick question and then move back into these physical models. Speaking of stories, my latest project is called Violence Recode, and this is a quite a different kind of model. Here I offer up, people are seated in two long lines facing each other, and I offer up a series of physical postures through images. So there's some drawings that are projected onto screens. And I explain everything in advance so that while the event is going on, nobody is speaking, nobody's directing, except the 25 musicians who are providing the musical drive and the musical rhythm for the event. So everyone in the room adopts the same posture. So here, rather than people offering up their individual approach in advance, here we all adopt the same posture, and each posture is then placed in relationship to two sentences. So, for example, the first posture everyone adopts is sitting in a chair in a comfortable position. And I ask people to feel how it feels to be in this position, because everybody knows what it feels like to sit in a chair comfortably. And then the first sentence comes up, and it says, a man waiting for his wife. So now we bring in story, and we are being put into a story. All of us are then a man waiting for his wife in a chair, and we understand how that feels. And then the title changes. So the title, let's say, of the picture of us changes, and it says, a man waiting for his husband. And in many cases, it then feels different to people. And we start to see, because this project is oriented toward examining structural violence like racism or sexism or heterosexism, so we start to see how these violent systems like heterosexism, for example, become resident in our bodies and shape what feels normal to us, even when we are not conscious of having a particular kind of bias. And so here I try to use story little through these simple images and give these simple images the power to take these big dialogues, which are sometimes hard to get hold of, down to the level of the individual. So how do, and Paul Farmer had a great quote, he says, how do violent systems like, I'm paraphrasing here, racism and sexism become embodied in the individual experience? And I think this is really important for us at this time. There's so much going on right now, a coming awareness of how these structures are negatively impacting us, and not just the people who are obviously negatively impacted by structures like racism, but everybody is. And so I'm trying to create these events that are not about, you know, who's wrong or who's on the right side, but to say, how do we examine, how do we use physical action as an instrument to examine systems so that we can see how we are engaging with them, and we can decide consciously how we want to engage with them.
So it seems then that there's many components to organizing the ideas, particularly around the three models that you've set out. They're distinct situations. You've organized them in different ways. It sounds like in relation to the audience, the issues that you've tackled in your three models are certainly, I would think, issues that are difficult to engage. And so choreography, people, stories in addressing, managing, and resolving challenges, and then the movement within that, how does that resonate within what I assume might be a natural reluctance of some to participate in choreographed movement?
Yeah, that's a great question. And also, one of the reasons that I initially didn't try it is because I really actually hate audience participation myself in when I'm at a show or in an event. I'm always worried about what's going to happen because a lot of times I find those things not effective. And what I've found once I started to try it out is that because in these events there is no audience, there's only participants. And people, what I was mentioning before about taking out the element that's usually present, for example, in a choreography that's based around dance, there's a skill element on some level, or there's a particular attention to the physicality and how it's being used. If I remove that from the work that the participants are doing, and that becomes just my responsibility, then the people are never wrong. So they're never put into an awkward position where they're doing something that feels like they don't know how to do, or they're doing it badly, or it's embarrassing. Instead, what I found is that when the model is effective, then people are relieved because on some level it's easier for people to do simple things like walk across the room or clap their hand or sit down or stand up or sit in a particular posture than it is to talk to strangers. And when I usually set the model up so that we begin with physical aspects and then eventually we do move into these language-based interactions. And people say then it's much easier to engage verbally after they've engaged physically because, for one thing, these physical experiences, these visceral experiences around these questions, which are always multifaceted and complicated, and invariably a lot of tensions come up around, you know, what does this mean? What does violence mean? What is the nature of being German, for example, or American? And so the issues become more clear when we experience them through the body, and then they can move into the language. And I have had, oftentimes, the first time I did, for example, Not on Not, the first evening, it had been sponsored by a bank as part of a project to encourage artists to engage in social action. So the public, so to speak, the first night thought that it was a show because I was normally doing performances. And so people showed up ready for a show, and then when they realized what was happening, there was a major traffic jam in the door with people like, oh, no, not wanting to go in. But our stage manager was there, and he was saying to people, no, you don't have to do anything. You just have to sit down and talk. And what I found over time is that if people get the sense right from the get-go, you know, I often say there's nothing weird's going to happen here. This is all we're going to do. We're going to do this and this and this. And then they like that part the best. They like the motion part because it gives them a way to engage with people with an entire room full of people quickly and without kind of an endless conversation, which oftentimes people can find burdensome if it's not to the point. And so these issues, which are so often so talked about in such divisive ways or on levels that don't get people anywhere. Here the body helps us get more succinctly to the point so that when we come into language later, we can continue with that kind of succinctness.
Now, you have models, and that helps people in thinking about their thinking in resolving challenges by incorporating these different forms of expression and in a way that seems will overcome whatever reluctance they may have or their initial response is, show me the door, I'm out of here.
Right.
So what other forms of expression and do you incorporate as well to help people be able to talk about things which really affect us all?
Mm. So one thing I've been working on, a project with the Academy of Visual Arts in Frankfurt, Germany, which is a college for visual arts. And I've been working with Tommaso Carnetto there for a couple of years on the question of how do we document, the initial question was how do we document these events in a way that's not boring and not invasive, because it's, of course, difficult to document a public dialogue without getting in people's faces in a way that they don't want. And we came up eventually with this version that we just did in Berlin last year, where we, without the public or the participants being aware of it, we covered the tables in a special kind of paint, and then we covered the paint with paper. So when people were seated at the table, the gestures and the motions and the actions that they did with their hands on the table left imprints. And our goal here was to create an image of the kind of connection area between the people. How did that work? What was the quality of the motion? What kind of approaches did people make? And what comes out of this, what we did, so we that would be at all the tables, and then right after the dialogue ended, we'd whip the paper off and make a print of each table. And then we had 25 images laid out in a line on the floor. So there, because it was 100 people in knot on knot each time. And so this then is yet another step back, because these steps back are what often help people see things differently. So now we've stepped back and we've just looked at, okay, what happened during my conversation with these people, not just, you know, what did we talk about, but what was I doing and what does that mean? And this then, what after knot on knot, we always have food and drink, and people wander through these pictures, and these become objects of contemplation that people find really meaningful and moving. And so this kind of visual translation can be really useful to people. And this is different than making a drawing of what we did or something like that, because which then gets back to the problem of skill and shame. Here we're saying, okay, what were the traces? And so the challenge for me and for Tommaso over there was to say, how can we create a format that inscribes the traces of people's motion and people's action and people's decisions in a way that then they can see?
And as you've been speaking, it seems to me that at the beginning you talked about organizing thoughts, structure, situations, and organizing, and it sounds through all the three models that there's been a great deal of structural work done. But at the mm-hmm. same time, it sounds as if there's a great deal of flexibility needed because you have a group of people. And so how do you integrate those two pieces, the structure and the flexibility?
Yeah, that's a big challenge and really interesting challenge, particularly in this new project that I'm doing, Violence Recode. So I did the first edition of it, so to speak, in Vermont. And now I'm doing it next month in Dresden, Germany. And what I'm finding is that I have to really radically overhaul the postures and the questions that are asked, because violent systems manifest differently in different communities, in different countries. And in order for people to be able to connect to them, I need to, of course, I can't myself know all these things because I don't know. So what I find interesting is I have the chance then to work with groups in different countries, in different communities, in different age groups and ethnic backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, because those people are the experts in what it means to live in that place. And they know from their experience, even if they haven't consciously been thinking about it, what feels normal and what doesn't feel normal, which are some of the ways that violent systems make themselves known in our bodies. And so the flexibility that, for example, I need in violence recode has to do with being able to change within the overall structure, to change the particular manifestation of the content. So the structure needs to be open enough that it says what we're doing, for example, in violence recode is we're using physical action, physical posture as a way, as an instrument to examine structural violence. And not on that, we're using simple motion, like walking through the room, as a way to describe what people care about, what they believe, and what their history is. And oftentimes the other moment of flexibility that I need to have is inevitably there's a point where someone comes up and says, wait a minute, what is violence, or what is, and starts to have objections to the gray factor, the grayness that is inherent in all of these questions. And so I need to be able to ride and to help other people ride the uncertainty that we will always encounter when we're trying to talk about these things, and to keep opening up the field of the questions, to widen the questions that we ask rather than narrow them down.
You know, Dana, as you've been speaking, I've been thinking about mediation practice, so mm-hmm. the work of the mediator, and how your work can inform the daily work of conflict managers and resolvers in whatever field of conflict work in which they're engaged. And you've just spoken about questions, opening those mm-hmm. questions up, and the work of the mediator being done in terms of questioning, again, structured, and moving through the issues and moving from open issues down to those with deeper meaning, of which you spoke earlier in terms of the models. And I'm wondering then, just in the last few minutes that we have left, just how can this inform that daily work? And I'm wondering if you can just wrap that up for me. So I can think about my thinking, and others can as well.
One of the ways that I find, because of, thinking in different fields, of course, translates into other fields, and one of the things that I find myself thinking when I'm working in a mediation situation or in a some kind of a coaching situation is to think about people's choices as actions. So to think about things as actions often makes it easier for people then to step back from them and to be able to consciously choose alternative actions. And this kind of physicalizing it on some level, we're saying, okay, right now I'm choosing, for example, to attack. Attack is an action. It's not a need. So to help people understand the difference between underlying needs and the actions that are being chosen, the strategies that are being chosen to try to meet those needs. And I find that when people in a mediation or in a coaching session can start to identify with the idea of the action that they're choosing and to recognize alternative actions, so that these are, it doesn't have to do with their personality. It doesn't have to do with what they believe necessarily. It's the action that they're choosing in response to
and
their belief and what the efficacy is.
And Dana, I know there's so much more about which we could speak, and I want to thank you so much for participating in Choreographic Public Dialogues, Dana Casperson. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.